What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, publishing a book. I have Dr. Mark Knobloch coming back and Dr. Jeff Conan coming back on the podcast. And between the two of them, there's probably, I don't know, 50-ish books where they have been published in. They have published themselves. They've been part of publishing. And so they know just a little bit about publishing a book. Dr. Knobloch actually owns a book publishing company, as well as being a professor at the University of Houston, Master of Athletic Training. And Dr. Conan has a gigantic bio of stuff that he's done, been a part of, international. He speaks all over the place, you know, New Zealand, Australia, just tons of different stuff. So it would be a lot easier and more efficient for you to just Google him and see his bio there than it would be for me to read it all to you. Or you could check out the last episode where we talked with Mickey Cuppett and Dr. Conan, as well as Adam Halpert, and we kind of went over the bios there. So without much further ado, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/publish-a-book. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/publish-a-book. So Dr. Knobloch and Dr. Conan have a book coming out soon. And so let's get started right there and tell me about this upcoming book, Dr. Mark Knobloch.
Actually, I'm gonna defer to Dr. Conan first because it's his idea. He kind of threw it out to me, and we've been collaborating. But I'll let him kind of take the lead because it's largely his idea, and he can tell you a little bit more about the background of it.
Well, so the title of the book is called "The Business of Athletic Training," and it's an idea that I started, gosh, I don't know, almost 20 years ago, literally as a hobby. And what it was just in my spare time throwing ideas down on paper and then elaborating on some of those ideas. And the essential of the book is that it talks about a timeline of athletic training, decisions that were made within the profession, within an organization, at legislative levels, and how those decisions have impacted where we are today or at each phase of those timelines, and what that means from a business perspective as an athletic trainer. Second part of the book provides tools for athletic trainers to become more business-like thinkers or more entrepreneurial, if you will. And this has been sitting on my desk, as I said, for almost 2 decades, where I would go back in and periodically revise and update and start all over to meet the currency of the data. And really where Mark's come in our conversations back and forth about textbook writing, Mark's sort of been the cleanup hitter on this to push me into gear to finish this, and has brought to the table some great ideas and some tremendous editing skills, I might add. You know, it doesn't matter how many books you write, you have to humble yourself, because I don't have a degree, I don't have a degree in English or grammar or writing. And you really benefit and you look better when others come in and take what you're trying to say and make it more articulate. And so I think it's been a great combination. Also, Mark brings much of his experiences to the project. So certain topics we look at, I think we started the conversation, Mark, where we had a lot of similar ideas, and that's what interested you in this. But at the same time, we look at things from two different angles. And so there's a couple of different viewpoints. And then lastly, what I'll add is we have a section in there where we've reached out to successful athletic training entrepreneurs and asked them to take part of a Q&A with us in the book, where they provide advice and share some of their experiences for the readers.
You know, a lot of what you're saying right there, that's how I've been successful. So my beautiful wife is watching. So real quick, I told her if she was watching live, she puts it on our TV. And so Gideon, hey, little buddy, my youngest son at home is watching. So, hey, son. But I've received probably $60,000+ worth of grant monies, you know, and some of those are $500 or $1,000 or $2,500 grants. And I would say I have that idea, but then Sarah comes in and says, you're too wordy, you're misspelling things, you're messing things up. And so she's the one that really fixes everything and makes it legible and understandable. And even, you know, as we're in the process of hiring a new athletic trainer, I said, hey, I'm going to send this email out to the applicants. Can you read over it? She's like, yeah, you misspelled stuff. That's not good. So I definitely appreciate the deal Dr. Knobloch has there, coming in and just making your work more articulate as you're discussing the business of athletic training book. And so I know Adam Halpern from Innovate AT was joining us earlier discussing about the business or athletic trainers being in business and owning their own company. So this is going to be an interesting topic. So the business of athletic training, I missed, did you say when that's coming out?
No, we've gone back and forth. So I'd say 60% of it was written already by Dr. Conan, and then I contributed and I had my experiences and added a couple chapters. So I think we're looking at maybe summer. We've kind of got the meat of it done, and there's a phase of writing. There's what we call the brain dump, where you just put everything out there you want into the book. That's kind of what we're tidying up now, is we know what we want in it, and then you got to go back and clean it up and edit it, copy edit it, things like that. So I'd say summer is a legitimate goal, depending on, you know, our schedules and timing and cover design, things like that. But I think, would you agree, Dr. Conan?
Yeah, you know, I think what's more important for us is to do it right when we put it out there and be pleased with the final product. We'll certainly make errors somewhere, and we'll maybe have a second edition at some point if it goes well. But the most important thing is, you know, in a perfect world, it would launch in Las Vegas. And that'd be awesome. But the truth of the matter is, if it's not ready by then, it's not ready by then. But when it does come out, we really think it's valuable. The information there is factual. It's about our real lives. It's about professional history. And again, a lot of really significant and important tools to help readers with in this profession. ATs are by nature innovative and creative individuals who, with some of these tools, can take off in different directions from a business perspective and be much, much more successful, at least from that standpoint. And what Mark and I write about a lot too is that when you find success from that standpoint, that carries over also into your personal life success and other goals that you have. So it's not just about making more money and being a successful business AT, but that it gives you the tools to be holistically successful when you find happiness.
All right, so we're talking about publishing a book, start to finish. You guys are working on one. Like I said, you've both done multiple books, lots of experience. So let's go to the beginning. Where did the idea to, hey, I'm going to publish a book come from? Was it just you had written articles and then you wanted to do a little bit more and then a little bit more? Or, like, I know you, Dr. Conan, you just mentioned that this was sitting on your idea for, this idea was sitting on your desk for, you know, 10 plus years. But Dr. Knobloch, why don't you start here? Where did the idea of publishing a book come from? And then we'll go over to Dr. Conan.
Just, you mean a recent book or in general?
Your first book.
My first book, very simple. Every semester our students turn in case studies, and it was just repetitive errors. And not on the students' fault, it's just they hadn't been trained. And so they'd start sentences with like a bullet point. It'd say things like athlete came into the athlete training room. I'd write, don't start it like that. You have to have the athlete, you know, and just repetitive every semester, repeated things. And I started thinking to myself, I need to just put together a writing guide, a case study writing guide, case report writing guide. And then I thought, you know, I actually wish they had a little bit more about sentence structure. And I wish they had a little bit more about forming a paragraph. And so it actually developed into, I was going to create a writing guide. And so I was talking to a colleague of mine, and they said, why don't you just look at doing a book? And I was like, no way, I can't ever do a book, you know. And I started thinking about it, and I'm going to probably go a little broader than you want, but I got kind of frustrated. I thought, you know, I've been trained by, and I'll just say the name Dan O'Connor and Mark Clark are my advisors, and they're brilliant writers. And they really broke me down into how to write, and then kind of built you back up, like, let's break you down, let's get you the basics as a professional writer, and then let's expand it out. And so I started thinking about it, and it became, why not write a book? Well, then you look at the processes. What does it take to write a book? And realistically, in the academic world, and Dr. Conan, you may agree or disagree, and you can chime in, but in the academic world, you pretty much have to do a published book through a publishing company. It's not as accepted to just self-publish a book. So I actually did what we call a book proposal. A book proposal is a multi-stage process that actually takes a long time, ends up maybe being 40 or 50 pages in some cases, about what's the idea of the book, what's the table of contents, what's the timeline, what's the competition, how much do they charge, how many readers will read this book, give me a sample chapter, et cetera. So I spent a couple weeks doing that. And then you do the next stage, which is send it out. And so you send out this book proposal, and it's very frustrating because you're just dying to start, and you end up waiting 3, 4, 5 months to hear anything back. And in this time, it's like, well, do I go ahead and keep writing more chapters, or do I stop and wait and everybody rejects? And I got rejected, 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 rejected. I think I sent out 23 proposals and got rejected 17 times. The 18th time, I got an individual that said, hey, let's talk about this. And in that time, I had also talked to another colleague that said, why don't you think about doing an edited book? And an edited book is where I serve as editor, and other individuals who are experts write the chapters. And so I kind of coordinate it. And so that took a lot of the pressure off of how am I going to meet these deadlines I'm proposing and things like that. And so it really, to answer your question, in that case, in the academic book, it stemmed from just there was a need for the resource. And so there was actually nothing that existed in sports medicine, athletic training, or really kinesiology in terms of professional writing. And all the books that we had, that was frustrating for me, and actually, even when I was a student, triggered a lot of the idea for this, was everything was in basic science. So if they give an example, it was about cell cultures. It was about incubating and growing your cell line. And so it got a little frustrating about trying to relate and make practical examples out of what you're being taught. And so from the academic book, which was my first one, it actually just stemmed from the students needing something to help them, which in turn would help me. And then it became, well, what other issues are there in professional writing? Well, what is it? What is professional writing? What is your goal? And then we looked at sentence structure, paragraph structure, developing an outline, how to use a writer's guide or the guide for the journal. And so just all these chapters started forming. And so my next stage was to look for authors. And Dr. Conan's just a funny example. Dr. Yellen from U of H had went to Dallas for a meeting, and the Joint Commission meeting. And he came back and was talking about this, a couple of people, and Dr. Conan was one of them. And he said he has these really neat ideas. And he said he's written a couple textbooks. And over time, you know, it had been a year or more. I said, you know what, I think it was a couple of months. I said, he would probably be a good author for such and such. And so I emailed him, and he was kind of hesitant because he's so busy, and understandably so. And he said, you know, I really like your idea for the book and the chapter you proposed. And so he wrote a chapter for me, and you know, and it's ironic because you just talked about consulting. And so Dr. Conan wrote a chapter on authorship issues such as author order, plagiarism, et cetera. And then ironically, he's going to the NATA this summer, and he's presenting on authorship, plagiarism, et cetera. So all of a sudden, you talked in the last show about either developing a niche or finding your value. Well, now he's going to probably get people wanting him to consult for them because he's an expert now in having written this chapter and researched it about authorship issues. So he's just created a new little area for himself that may expand into a consulting business. So really, I mean, I can go on about, you know, and I'll mention it later about how my general books came to be, but Dr. Conan, he's written 27 books, whatever it was, so he can give you a little bit of input from his side as well.
So what Mark just mentioned is really how things work. He invited me to write a chapter on plagiarism and authorship, and I found it to be a fascinating topic. I've never really learned anything formal about it. I just learned things from mentors. And at the same time, I was part of the NATA Foundation's mentor-mentee program. So I brought on board Liz Rosenkrum, who co-edited or co-authored a chapter with me. So it was an opportunity for us to work and collaborate together. And we learned a ton about how to write different terms that are out there regarding plagiarism. What are the actual recommended guidelines on authorship, et cetera, et cetera. And then we decided to put a proposal forward for Vegas, and it was accepted. And so, yeah, I don't know if I'm an expert on this, but it was a fun niche for me to learn the information and the content. And I certainly feel like I have a leg up on the information now, but I wish I knew it for the last 20 years. But that's how things work. And so, you know, we've developed new relationships, we've developed new content areas, and that's what we were talking about on the last show, Jeremy, about how the networking process and the consulting process works. For me, when I started textbook writing, you know, I think everybody has ideas. You know, when you're in school, like, how could this book be better? How could this person teach the content better? And that's kind of like a lot of how my ideas started. Echo what Mark said. I can't even count anymore the number of times my proposals have been rejected. That's part of the process, particularly on book number one. Who are you? Why do you deserve to write? What kind of expertise do you think you have? What do you know about the market? There's a lot of questions that a novice or rookie author needs to be prepared to be pushed back on, because rejections come at quite fast and furious rates. It's when you have a track record and you start publishing that that eases off a little bit and even more offers come in. In fact, offers come in for you to write on things you don't even feel like you have expertise on, but somebody thinks that you've written before and you can write it again. Well, for me, ironically, I had a whole bunch of proposals floating around. And what ended up happening was I started writing three books at the exact same time. So I didn't start with a book. I started with three simultaneously. But I have to tell you, one of them was my good friend J.I. Sear and I were on a float in a little bed of water in Ocean City, Maryland, at this place called Secrets. And Jay and I were just talking about, boy, wouldn't it be easier if there were a simple book that just put the special tests in it? And we didn't have to weed them out from these big, thick textbooks when we were trying to study them and practice them in lab settings. And so while we were both drinking a nice smoothie in the summer at Secrets, on a napkin, we sketched the idea for this book over 20 years ago called Special Tests in Orthopedic Examination. It was really, really simple. It wasn't anything that people didn't know. It was just repackaging an idea and putting it into a format that was more user-friendly. Today, 20 years later, the book is in its fourth edition. It's an Allied Healthcare bestseller. And all we have as a responsibility is to keep up with the currency of the evidence and literature regarding the special tests. And we've brought additional authors on board. Allison Snyder has been phenomenal, taking the lead in the last edition. And so we've expanded our experts to be involved with the product. But I, you know, in one sense, I'll tell you, anybody can write. And in the other sense, you just have to be mentored through the process. So Mark talked about his mentors. When I first started with my ideas, Bill Prentice was my sounding board, and he guided me through the process. He had been involved with the, you know, the Bible, the Arnheim Prentice book for many, many years. And throughout the course, I learned to become good friends with the different publishing companies. And they were my mentors and continue to be my mentors now with ideas about the content, the marketplace, how to package the textbooks, and they're trusted friends. And going back to what we talked about again in the recent podcast, for me, that's been the beauty of this. There's a huge sense of satisfaction that Mark talked about when you finish a book and others acknowledge it. But to me, it's the relationships that have come out of those products that have really meant more than anything else. And I consider many of these folks in the publishing industry some of my best friends in the profession nowadays.
Yeah, and you know, that we talked about academic, and Dr. Conan's, that's his area, is academic textbooks. And when you look at, you know, we're going to talk about self-publishing as well. And so Amazon has created this huge open market for writing a book. And so I'll tell you, when Dr. Conan talks about proposals being out there, it is a rush just knowing that there's a possibility somebody's either going to give you the approval to write a book, or you're going to get rejected. You never know what's coming in. And so when you have, you know, 30 proposals sitting out there, you're waiting for emails. And so it's really exciting, even though you're going to probably get rejected. He made a great point. The newer you are, the more likely you're going to get rejected. It's just like a business. I always think of as the publisher being like a bank. They're not going to take a risk on you if you don't have anything to show for it. Just like if you don't have a job or you don't have income, they're not going to give you a loan to get your business started. You have to show that you have some things there. They're not going to take a risk on you and spend all this money on publishing your book. But there's this new side of self-publishing. And so I just, you know, from the academic side, it was the students. But I remember very clearly while I was waiting for those proposals to come back, I was like, this is kind of fun. And so I actually wrote another proposal for a book that I didn't think was get accepted anyway, largely because I didn't have any background. And so I just started writing it myself. And I remember very clearly sitting in my living room, and I was watching, and I think I've mentioned this before, I was watching King of Queens, and at least the 40th time I've seen the episode, I could say every line in there. And I started thinking, you know, what am I going to get? What are my kids getting out of this? They're not getting me. Oh, my, you know, my funeral, they say, well, he really liked his King of Queens, you know? And so I actually just literally sat there and said, what can I do to improve myself? And so I remember specifically shutting the TV off. I went in the computer and I just started drafting a proposal. And so I sent the proposals out expecting rejection. So I just started writing. And so, you know, an hour here, 2 hours here, my wife and I trade off nights reading a story to the kids. So when she took them up to go read a story to them, I'd go to the computer and I'd start typing. And, you know, everybody, there's this big, I don't know, stigma that writing a book is this amazing process and it just takes 2 years and you're going to be buried in your basement doing, no, that's not true at all. It's not. So you spend 15 minutes one day, 30 minutes the next day, an hour the next day. If you do that, you know, let's say you average an hour a day. If, you know, and a lot of people are going to say that's impossible, but an hour for simple math, an hour a day, you do that for a month, that's 30 hours you've spent typing. You're going to have something pretty valuable there. And so to go back to your question, how did I get on my non-academic tech? I just thought of an idea and I said, hey, I wonder if I can turn this into a book. And so I first one I started on a vestibular condition I had. So I wrote the book, got it, you know, fully written the way I wanted it. At the time I paid for editing and development and everything. And then I had another idea. And the worst thing for me was when I go running, because I go running for an hour and I nothing to think about except how are you going to, you know, you have to do something to stimulate your mind. So, oh, here's an idea for a book. I did one on this condition. Maybe I should do one on this. And so it literally when you have an idea, you think about it. The question is whether you're going to go through a proposal process, which again, then takes sometimes 3-4 months to hear back from them that you may get all rejections on anyway, or you just go the self-publishing route and you'll start, and we'll talk about that. And you can just start writing your book, you know, and it's not difficult to do. So.
All right. So okay, I'm sitting here. All right, I'm writing a book. I'm going to write, and, you know, you and I kind of talked about it a little bit. So I'm going to write a book about the adoption process, or, you know, my adoption story, whatever it is, because Sarah and I were in the process of adopting. And so where is the first step? Like, is there a writeabook.com or, you know, like...
That's a good question. I think it goes back to this morning. Look at consulting. Look at somebody that's done it before. I can tell, I mean, you can hire me, you can hire Dr. Conan. That's what I've written several this way. The first thing you want to do, and Dr. Conan can chime in any moment, is look at the market research. Do your market research. What does the competition say? Maybe they're all about the government process, or maybe nobody's hinted at the government. Not the government, but the steps, the requirements you have to go through. And so if you were wanting to, the way I would look at it is if you're wanting to become somebody who adopts a child, what information do you want? I need to know, how much does it cost? How long does it take, et cetera? Well, is there any books out there on that? And if not, there's your book idea. Make a chapter on the cost. Make a chapter on the paperwork involved, et cetera. And then, you know, just, you know, you can do a brain dump and just, that's what I do. I just have, okay, here's what I want to cover. Boom, I'll spend 2 nights just dumping everything into a Word document. And then later on, I'll go back and look at the grand scheme and start filing everything. Okay, that's too much. Or I talk about that over here. So definitely market research, how much information's out there. And because you may just say, no, I don't need to write a book. I'll just buy that one because I'm going to be writing the same thing. Dr. Conan, any input on that?
Yeah, you know, you can walk into Barnes & Noble. There's no shortage of books. There's no shortage of authors. There's no shortage of topics. And there's no shortage of publishing companies, whether they're self-published or through professional organizations. The proposals for all of those are different. And that's why you really do want to either have a trusted advisor, mentor, or a consultant to save you that time and effort. Because if you put together a proposal that's not adequate, it gets kicked back real fast. But they don't tell you why it's kicked back necessarily. Just say, thank you, we're not interested. But you work with a person who's seasoned and experienced in the process, and they'll tell you the key things to look for. And I'll give you a great example. It doesn't matter how many books I've published. I came up with a recent idea the other day that was more of a general public book for a certain population of people about a certain sports medicine type injury. And so I talked to one of my closest colleagues in the publishing business who I've worked with for many years. And I said, here's my idea. What do you think? He sent me to Barnes & Noble. And he said, you need to go and look up and down the aisles. You need to look at the specific books. Are you, when you say you want to teach this for kids, are you talking about 5 or 6 year olds, 7 or 8 year olds, 9 or 10 year olds? Now I'm sitting here thinking under 15. And he's telling me, no, Jeff, the marketplace of what they can read and understand and comprehend is totally different from K through 1, 2 through 3, 4 through 5. So I'm walking up and down here and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is out of my league already. I'm talking to moms and dads on purpose. Do you mind if I ask, please? I'm not stalking you. Don't think I'm weird. I want to write a book. I've been sent out here on a mission. How old are your kids? And if this is my idea, do you think you would resonate for that level? I mean, this is what I have to do to figure out if, yes, this is the book I really want to write or not. And so I was extremely inexperienced. That's a totally different market. And so you really want to have good advisors to lead you in the right direction and edit and craft your proposal. So when you submit it, it's top notch and it has all the key phrases and buzzwords and facts and marketing research for whoever's going to publish it to say, yes, I'm willing to make an investment in you and this topic and we'll work with you and publish it for you. And even if, you know, in Mark's case, if you own your own company that way, you still are approaching it that same way with proposals that you get. If they look like they're high quality, it you know, your radar goes off and you have a greater interest. But if a proposal looks like it's inexperienced when it's put together or it's not complete, then that's sort of almost like a leap you take to say, I wonder if the book's gonna look like this too. And so first-time authors are oftentimes asked to write an entire chapter or two or three so the publishers can get a sense of what they're putting together. So you're really starting over every single time, depending on the idea, the audience, the target of the topic. And it's nice to have a niche in one area and you can get better at it. But as soon as you start branching off, or if somebody asks me a question that's outside of what I do and the type of writing I do, I'm kind of hesitant to give advice because I know now that it's so far out of my area of expertise based upon this little exercise that I just did recently and learned about.
All right, so both of you guys kind of said that have somebody that you trust as a like a sounding board, but how, like, you know, those of us that are not book publishers, where would I go to look for that? I mean, do I just Google book publishing consultants or, so that's kind of what I'm looking for is like, if I was going to take action today, what would be the first thing I should do?
Yeah, let me jump in, and then I want Jeff to kind of take over. One option you'll have is an agent. A book agent is somebody that is kind of your publicist. You know, but the problem is you have to convince the agent that what you have is a good product too. So there are a lot of options, and I don't want to get into self-publishing yet because I want to focus on that as itself. But there are a lot of ways you can do it. You can actually hire a company to take whatever you give them and put it into a book. That's one option of self-publishing. The problem is you have to buy the books that you're getting published and then sell them yourself. So if you buy 500 books for, let's say it's, I don't know, $8,000 and they'll give you 500 finished books of whatever you submit, they might even include editing, copy editing, book cover format, ISBN number purchase, all that stuff. But then you're stuck with that book, so you have to sell it yourself. So when Dr. Conan talks about book publishers and the proposal, their proposal is to say, I hate to say it this way, but it comes down to, are we going to make a profit off of this idea? If we are, if it's a good idea, we really want it. But there is also a side of, is this idea worth selling? So want to write a book on the adoption process or what, you know, a title might be what every adopted parent needs to know. Well, maybe there's 712 of those books out there. They're probably not going to go on a first-time author and do it. What's really frustrating is, and this drives me insane because I have book ideas, but they're, a celebrity will come up with an idea and they will just jump, publishers will jump right on it because those celebrities have a million followers that if that celebrity puts a book out, no matter how quality, poor quality, I guess it is, the publisher will snatch it up because they know they're going to make a profit on it because people will buy it just because that book is out there. Not if Dr. Jeff Conan puts a book out that is outstanding in quality, but he only has guaranteed 72 sales. They're like, well, this isn't really what we need. So an agent will help you with that. But the problem with an agent is you have to convince the agent that you're worth taking on. I've done it. I had one. Dr. Conan's had probably several, and he has a much stronger bond, and he can talk about that with the agents. But you have to first propose to the agent your book, and then they will either accept. I've sent out hundreds to agents, and I had one that really liked it and ended up getting not picked up through a traditional publisher. They love the idea, but the competition was selling for $9, and they said, we're just not going to make a pro. You'd have to sell 100,000 copies of this for us to even break even or whatever the number, I don't remember the number. And they said, we're just not interested. We love it, but until we can figure out a way to that this book is better than the competition and still within our price point, it's not going to have any luck. So that is the simple answer is you have an agent that does all that for you. Otherwise you can also go to a book self-publishing company and just pay them a lot of money and they will do whatever you want. They will literally take your idea. They'll put it into the format. They'll have, you know, for different price points, you get different things. Some you just send them the file and they print it in hardcover and you buy 500 of those books and then you distribute them. Others they'll have, editing, they'll have, formatting. So your book looks correct. You go from a Word document into a book, takes a little bit of work. And then you literally they'll spit out 50 books, 100 books, whatever. Usually 100 is the minimum to make them profitable. And you get the book into your hands. You'll get 16 cases of books. The problem is then, what are you going to do with them? You better hope they sell. So they don't care about the idea. They don't care about anything. They just care that you pay the dollars. So there is that option. And then we'll talk in a little bit about print on demand too. But the risk with that of doing whatever you want, the positive is your book comes out, not a publisher telling you, no, I want you to include this also, or take this chapter out, I don't like it. And you're saying, well, I really want that. And they're saying, no, you can't have that. The self-publishing, they call them vanity presses. They'll take whatever you give them, they'll print you out a book and however many copies you buy, and you will be a published author. It's not, but it goes back to what Dr. Conan said. If you don't put a good quality book out, nobody's going to buy it. Okay. And Dr. Conan, your thoughts on that? His question.
Yeah, I could probably write a book on how to pick a good literary agent, but the market's not big enough and it wouldn't sell. There are good literary agents and there are really, really bad ones and even corrupt ones. And the first one I ever had actually was corrupt. You know, it took me a while to figure it out. I met this individual on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills over a cup of coffee. And we agreed to a contractual arrangement where this person would coach me through. This was a non-academic textbook for the general public on youth sports injuries, and they thought it was a great idea, but we'd have to really hone in on the proposal, have some sample chapters, and here was the fee I paid this person to help craft a good proposal and then help farm the book out. That's the role of the agent. The agent is to put your package together and then farm it out to the publishers. And what I found out after a while was I started circulating back and forth to original things I had in writing. And I kind of got a sense that this person was just taking advantage of my time, which meant I had to keep paying them longer and longer to get the proposal right before we farmed it out. And that was my very first exposure in writing to essentially getting ripped off. And then I learned the process of how to become more savvy in finding individuals. Your agent is you. I mean, you have to have a really good, trusting, strong relationship that this person's working on your behalf. It's very different than a sports agent. In the sports agent, you're representing someone who has potential or is produced, and it's a lot easier to farm them out because you have a limited number of teams, if you will, within that sport to farm them to. Here, these agents have, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of potential publishers to put your work out to. And so if you have a trusted person who can help you with that, it's great. If you're going to stay within a field, though, Jeremy, for example, if you want to do academic textbooks, your best thing to do is, number one, is lean on the people in your profession who have done it and ask them about their experiences, and then take the time to meet with the different publishers. And the reason I say that is, you know, if you look at athletic training, for example, you can count on, you know, maybe one hand at the most, one and a half, the number of textbook publishers in our profession. So you have the opportunity to meet with all of them and ask them the questions you have, or get a feel for who you feel more comfortable with. Talk about the process, the timeline, the editing that they put you through. What will it take to have a successful book, to do a second edition? You can ask them all these tough questions and walk away feeling like who you want to work most with. But again, as I mentioned earlier, once you get out of that area of expertise that you're in, your niche, you really want to find people who you can trust to use as advisors to help figure out their process. And you don't necessarily need an agent. Once your name becomes big enough or successful enough in that area, you can take care of yourself. You can negotiate better on yourself, on your behalf, because you'll learn. You'll learn from the mistakes you made. You'll learn from the things that you did well with. But I think Mark brought up a really good point. At the end of the day, I mean, it is a business. Book publishing is a business. And so whoever's going to take on that large load has to make a profit and turn a profit. So not only does the product have to be good, but it has to have a market to sell it to, and it has to have a good price point that will generate a revenue in return. And that's where that trade-off comes in that was discussed, where if you just write and you turn everything else over to the company, they have the risk. So that's why you get a small royalty and they take on the revenue. If you are your own company, then you take all the risk in it. And that's why you're asking for them to pay you up front. You'll publish all their stuff, but I'm getting paid up front. Now it's your job. It's on your end to sell your books, and you have to worry about that. At the end of the day, the ideas and the writing and all that, it's just a form of a business. And whoever takes the risk has the opportunity to benefit more on the revenue side.
All right, so what I'm understanding here is if I'm going to write a book, one, go ahead and start writing, get my ideas on there, you know, maybe do the brain dump and then kind of sort through that idea, write the first chapter or so. And then while I'm doing this process, contact somebody. So contact Dr. Conan or contact Dr. Novick and say, hey, I'm looking for a consultant. Would you be interested in doing this, or can you point me in that direction? Because then it should be easy enough for you to say, okay, well, here's my list of consultants that I would use or recommend. And then it's somebody that you can trust, and so you're not getting a con artist, right? So is that kind of a fair starting point?
Yeah. When I say brain dump, you outline first, but you're, one thing that's key here is you're going to have to write the book. The question is whether an agent may tell you, like my agent, they wanted multiple chapters. They said, send me one chapter. And I spent, you know, a couple weeks doing that. I'd send it to him, and then 2 weeks later, I'd hear back from him. She's like, that looks good. Can you go ahead and send me chapters 2, 3, and 4? So there are some companies, in fact, the academic book that Dr. Cohn and I worked on together, that proposal was written without the book being finished. Some companies will tell you, I also want to see the full finished product. By the way, I also want to know what your timeline is, what the market is, things like that. So yes, that's the key. Is you're very rarely as a new author will you be able to sell your book idea with just the proposal. So when you say, should I go ahead and start writing? Yes, go ahead and start writing. If you can get 6 weeks of writing done before you ever hear your first rejection or acceptance, well, you got it done. You know, instead of sitting there waiting for those proposals to go out, and this is if you do direct to publisher or using an agent. So if you want to just do a self-publishing, we'll talk about that. You don't have a proposal. You just write the book and then you do everything yourself. And Dr. Conan brought up a good point. Why would we go to a publisher and make 10% of our book sales? Well, because they do everything. They do cover design and the costs. They have bought the ISBN number. They format your book. They do copy editing of your book. And then they do marketing of your book, was probably the most important, because they have this audience, which, in, for example, we use a publisher that is in kinesiology, sports medicine-based textbooks. They have the marketing, the contacts, the forms already set up. So they do all the work. All I do is sit back. I send them the final file. I mean, it takes more work, but obviously I sit back. Once I send them the file, I'm done. I mean, I literally, and Dr. Conan with his publishers, you just get royalty checks, but you get 10%. And then if you have an agent that found that publisher for you, they would usually take 15% off of your 10 or 12%. So there, it's important, but the other side of it is those companies are going to expect you to do marketing as well. You're going to have to use social media and things like that. So it is a process, but if it's a, my Dr. O'Connor made a very good point. publishers need writers just as much as writers need publishers. So publishers are not this amazing, you know, godsend that gets to do whatever they want. They need you to do, they need you to write books. And so it's not like they're going to just reject you because they don't like your name. It's they need, they're going to reject you if you don't put out a good product. But if you put out a good product that's going to make them money, they're going to want you to do that. So, but to your question again, it's, there's market research involved. They're not going to take on your book if, again, there's 700 books out there and they sell for $6.99 or they sell 99 cents on Kindle. Because you probably want to make some money off of this. That's, I mean, yes, you love writing or love to get your idea out, but there's a financial side. It's a business for you. If you're spending 6 months doing this book, you want to probably make money off of it. And if they see that everybody else is, they're selling a million copies, but those copies are going for 50 cents a piece, that's still $500,000 of income. So it's hard for you to say, well, I probably think mine will be about $17.99. They're like, no, it's not going to work. Again, like it happened to me. Love the idea, but the profit's not there and they can't pay their bills. They can't pay their sales reps and copy editors and all that. So Dr. Cohen,
I want to take a step back here. We've been talking a lot about the process, but I think where all this needs to start is like everything else with is the why. Why do you want to write a book? And if the answer to that question is to get rich, you can turn off the podcast now. That's not A, how it works. And if you even think that the little extra money is nice, which it is, divided by the number of hours, and you're far below minimum wage. So it really isn't about the money. As we both alluded to so far, there's an enormous sense of self-satisfaction of completing a product of this magnitude. And when that happens, you pat yourself on the back, others recognize your work, it does become a niche for you. So it might open doors for other opportunities. But there's a, you know, you might have an idea that you just want to get off your chest and no one's done it. So someone gives you an opportunity to get to write about it. Or you have an idea, even though there's three other books on the market, but your idea is significant enough that it's different that you think you compete against the market. So there are reasons you do it. But if you're not sure why you're getting into the textbook writing business, you want to carefully think that through, because even if it's an hour a night for the month or however much time you spend, that's time you're not spending with family, friends, or work, or whatever else it might be. And so it's a commitment. It's a significant dedication. And I will tell you this, the one thing nobody warned me about, nobody, and that is when your book is successful. Because when you finish writing, you're never done if the book is successful. Before you know it, after you're done with your first few breaths, you're discussing another edition. You're discussing other ideas because you are a success. And in the publishing company's eyes, that's a great place to start. Someone who has written, they showed us the proposal was exactly what they said. I wonder if they have another idea they can write on some other topic. So it's a great problem to have, don't get me wrong, but nobody tells you that from day one, that if the book is successful, get ready, we're gonna start writing number two. And so know the why. Know why you're getting into it and be prepared for the commitment, especially when it does go well.
All right, so publishing a book, we know our why. We know why we're doing it. It's to help others. We know we're going to go ahead and just start with the outline and then start writing. And then we're going to contact either Dr. Knobloch or Dr. Conan to find an agent or a consultant that's going to help point us in the right direction. We're going to continue working on writing our book so that our ideas are there and formulating and we're not just having a lack of motivation. So what is next after, you know, we've got the agent, or, and so then what?
I let Dr. Conan go from the agent side or the publisher side, and I'll talk about self-publishing because I think that's huge and that's where a lot of our audience will want to look. But Dr. Conan can talk about the process of once you've got the agent or got the publisher, then what? And the answer is easy, but he can tell you exactly how detailed it is.
So assuming at this point your proposal has been accepted?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking, yes, Jeremy? Well, at that point, you have to follow up what you said you're going to do. And I have to tell you, in all honesty, of 20 plus years of writing, the guy sitting right next to you is the best in the business. He's the most organized, holding people accountable to the timelines and deadlines that he promised the publisher. Because one of the most difficult things to do is you're making a prediction up front here's how long I can write this book, and I'll get it to you. It's how long it will take me to do it. And it's not always that easy. Life happens, and other things get in the way. But Mark is absolutely phenomenal. We turned his editing textbook in before deadline. Publishers love that. That doesn't often happen. And truth of the matter is that if you're a contracted author and you don't meet the deadline, there's not much they can do, really, because they still want the book to come out. So if you're a month late, 2 months late, 6 months late, they're just going to kind of be politically correct and say, hey, you know, when will you think we'll get this? We really want to see it out. I don't think that's the best level of professionalism on our end if we're not meeting our deadline. But again, life happens. And sometimes when you're editing a textbook with multiple contributors, it's a little bit of babysitting to stay on top of people and make sure that it stays. This is a top for you, but it might fall down to 10th or 11th in their list of priorities in their life. So the goal after that is really just to have discipline and stick to what you promised. And I can tell you this also, though, when you do that, again, you're more likely to have more opportunities when you put a proposal forward, because the publishers respect your level of professionalism and what you've done when you've told them you're going to do it.
And real quick, Dr. Conan, can you tell them the real quick story you told me about when you you went and asked one of your chapter authors for his chapter, if he was finished? Do you remember telling me that, what he said or she said?
Of course I do. So at the risk of throwing somebody under the bus, if they're watching this here, many, many years ago, I had a textbook with multiple contributors, and one of the individuals writing the chapter on the topic of communication. The chapter was not turned in on time, and this was before cell phones. So multiple emails back and forth. I said, yeah, I sent it to you. It's on the way. You should, you know, track it with UPS, et cetera, et cetera. And then one day I randomly called and got this person's secretary. And I said, can you give me the tracking number for the package? And the secretary said, you mean the chapter that's on my computer right now that I'm editing for him? And so this was my real first example of, there was a little bit of dishonesty, and the title of the chapter was communication. And so I ended up having to write the chapter to meet the deadline for the publishers. So you will find this, and you know, as a small tip of advice, this is a little bit down the road, but if you edit a book and you have multiple contributors, if you solely go on name recognition because that person's a content expert, don't necessarily think you're going to get the work in on time. And what's equally as important is the people who agree to do this for you will be able to say, yes, I will commit to this project, I will meet your deadlines, and I will get it done. Even if they grab other people on board to be co-authors with them in the chapter, that's fine. But I've learned through decades of doing this that sometimes contributors who, I won't say I lost friendships over, but it's kind of, you know, put a little bit of a rough situation between a relationship when an individual hasn't kept up their end of the bargain of meeting the deadlines for you. That was the story, right? That was the story you wanted to tell. Yeah, it's pretty infamous in my world.
All right, so now maybe I get the rejection letter or I choose to go self-publishing. Take it away, Mark.
Yeah. And that's going to happen. And every rejection is a punch in the gut. It's like your students, they think they turn in great work and they get back a C or a D. It's like, but I thought when I turned it in, it was great. And again, it could be political. It could be they can't publish yours because it contradicts something else. It could be financial, that they love your idea, but they just can't make a profit on it. So the next thing we look at is what we call self-publishing. Self-publishing means that you're taking your idea and you're getting it into book format without the use of an agent, without the use of a publisher. Because the publisher takes on all the risk, they look at it as a business. So if they don't like the risk, that they're not, that usually it's not going to make money. And you know, interesting financially, it's scary and it's exciting, because a publisher may give you, you know, and realistically in academic textbooks, this will never happen. But if you write a good fiction novel, a great fiction novel, you might get an advance of $500,000, and it's your money. Here's a $500,000 check to tide you over while you still continue to write. In academics, you don't see that. And in self-publishing, you won't see that at all. So what you do, let's say you get rejected, but you're passionate about this idea, and we'll just go back to the adoption process. So what you can do is and there's a lot of branches. I'll say that you can go this way or this way. Well, off of those, there's three different ways you can go. But realistically, you go to the Vanity Press where you just write the book and you give it to them and pay them a fee and they do everything for a cost. It might be a minimum order of 500 books or 100 books, and it may cost you $3,000. For $3,000, we'll put out the book. For $4,000, we'll put out your book and we'll edit it. For $4,500, we will format it. You know, otherwise, you have to send them the file exactly how you want it. They spit it in a computer that prints and binds your book. That's one option, Vanity Press. The only issue with that is that, as I said, you get shipped the amount of books you order. So you have to deal with getting them out. So if somebody orders one, you have to pay shipping and everything else. Now what we have is what's called print on demand. And print on demand is really a neat process, and it's kind of spearheaded by Amazon, but a lot of companies utilize it. And what that is effectively you finish your book, you format it, you do everything needed. You have to buy an ISBN number. You have to get a cover designed and finalized according to the size of the book, the thickness of the spine, the print size. You get photos embedded. You take photos and you utilize them. Everything. There's a lot of stuff involved in publishing a book. But you do it all yourself, or you hire somebody to do it for you. It could be that I hire a cover designer, and then I hire a formatter, and then I hire an editor. So maybe it's $100 or $600 or whatever it is. So let's say, just theoretically, and what I do everything myself, but I have some training in that a little bit, so it's easier than for most people. But I take those two files. One's gonna be a cover, and one's gonna be the final book in Word format, according to whatever size of the page, like a 5x, for example, this is a 5x8. This is a, I don't know if you can see it, this is a 6x9 book, okay? So you pick the size you want, you pick the font, you pick the spacing, you design everything out, and you literally upload it to a site. It's now Kindle Direct. It used to be CreateSpace. You upload it. It goes through their quality checks, and once it's finalized, the book is on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble, and when somebody orders that book, they literally scroll through Amazon, type in the name, you know, title, adoption process. How do I prepare myself for the adoption process? Hopefully your book comes up, they click on that book, they order it, and Amazon will print that book in this gigantic printer the size of this room, fast as paper can get through there. It spits out books with covers on it, goes into a box, and that box is shipped directly to you. There's zero inventory. You're literally done once your book is approved by Amazon, and it spits it out. So that is an option. And again, I go back to saying that some people look at book publishing as this enigma of like it's the most amazing thing in the world. Anybody can do it. Amazon is really taking it to the level of the general consumer, away from having to get a proposal done or getting an agent, and that's good and bad because anybody can publish a book. So that also means anybody can publish really good books. Anybody can publish really, really bad books. And there are books on there that you look and they have misspellings in them. The cover is blurry, but it's on Amazon, you know, and so it somehow it survived. And so I just tell people, if you have an idea, if you're an expert in something, and we've been talking about academic books, this is any topic in the world. You could talk about how to the best way to I don't know, trim your dog's hair. I don't know, fur. But you could write a book on that. Now, what's also interesting is you have ebooks now, which is basically you take the same Word document and just upload it to you create an ebook instead of a paperback. And that is now available on Kindle. You can order it for 99 cents. A lot of people have them for free just to get their name out, like Dr. Cohn was talking about. Start establishing your expertise. Some of those books are 10 pages long and they're 49 cents. But if you sell 400 of them, you made a little bit of money, you know, but there's also really bad ones out there. So with the self-publishing, the only difference is you take on all the risk, you take on all the work. So you have to get a cover design. And when you Google things like how to get a book published, you're talking about, there are a few things that are really, really important because you'll really ruin your reputation. If you have a bad cover, misspelled words, poor copy editing goes along with misspelled words, poor formatting. People are going to look at that and the worst thing you're going to get is, and what do I all do when we want to buy a product? What do you use as your guide, Jeremy, to decide if you want to help buy a product?
Your reviews.
You go to the reviews. People will go on there and the reviews will be one star. full of misspelled words, could not follow, written for a fourth grader, couldn't learn anything on in this book that I couldn't Google and figure out myself. So if you do that, that's part of the risk you take on. Now as a self-publisher, you get bad reviews and people look on there and there's 22 reviews and the average review is 1.2 stars. Nobody's going to buy your book. So with self, that's why it goes back to hire somebody to do your formatting, hire somebody to make a cover for you and just do a good book. Like Dr. Conan said, put a good product out there. And then you might have a 300 page book. You might have a 72 page book, but 7 billion people in the world, probably, I don't know, 2 billion of them are on Amazon. You have a pretty good audience that probably has some connection to your idea, depending on how specific it is. And you literally can put a book out there and do it yourself with, and no publisher ever is involved. So it's got a little bit of stigma to it. Like, oh, you couldn't, you self-published because you couldn't get, you know, a book deal. Well, yeah, but I can also tell you that I have taken 8 months. I know the longest was 8 months from when I sent a proposal to an agent to when I got rejected by that agent. 8 months, I can put out several books of my own. And then, you know, it's just, there is a stigma, but with the digital age, people just can put it on Amazon and then market it. So there is that good side to it. You just still have to spend some effort and probably some money if you're not an expert in writing to get it done correctly. I mean, quite honestly, Jeremy, you can hire somebody to write your book for you. There are companies that will literally, you'll say, I want a book out there. Here's my outline. I wanted to talk about these 22 things. They will literally write the book for you, send you the proofs. You say, no, change this. Now, it'll be $1,500, $2,000, but everything, it looks like you wrote that book. You could say you're a published author. So there's a lot of options, and I'm not trying to cheapen it, but that is a somewhat cheaper way of doing it, cheaper as in quality, because you didn't write it. It's not from the heart, but you can be a published author that way. And so there are a lot of, don't look at it as I can never write a book. You can, there's options for you to do it, but if you're going to do it the right way so that you get established as an expert and get some, you know, financially it can help, you know, make a little bit of money off of it for your efforts. But also, like we've been talking about, you know, help people, but we've also been focusing on academics. You can write fiction books. You know, there's romance. You wouldn't believe the genres out there. There are things like, you know, youth vampire fiction with a strong female character. That's a whole genre of books out there. There are, you know, fashion for teenage boys, teenage girls that you could write it literally. Go into that category and sell your book under. So just amazing amount of options if you choose to do that.
You know, and also, I mean, regarding the stigma, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when taking an online class with the stigma.
Exactly.
Complete online degrees, you don't even have to step foot on campus. And it really is not about whether the degree itself is quality or not. It's all in the eyes of who's delivering it. Some are good and some are not so good. It's really the same thing you'll see with the book products. And you know, again, we're not talking solely here about evidence-based curricular textbooks. There's an opportunity out there if you have an idea and the ability to, and a passion to move forward with it, with your why. Like Mark said, you can write on any topic that you want, and there will be an audience out there who's has the same interest that you do.
All right, so we've gone through, again, starting with why, going through the basic steps, finding a consultant, beginning your outline, going ahead and starting to writing, deciding if you're going to go with a publisher or self-publishing, the printing on demand possibilities and options. Mark, you talked about deciding to give up King of Queens, your favorite TV show, and just writing every day, kind of making that part of your habit of success and leaving a legacy there. And I mentioned that I am terrible with the grammar, you know, even a simple email or a tweet. I just, for some reason, can't seem to get all the words correct. And so what are some of the things that you would recommend for someone who is not very gifted at writing to kind of consider or to look at in writing a book?
Dr. Conan?
Yeah, hire you.
He's a little frustrated with me because he sent me his book and I did what I do. I edit it and I get his side. He doesn't look his his expertise is in the knowledge. Mine is in the flow. And so I would say, you know, what do you mean by this? And I knew the answer, but I was pointing out when you say, you know, we did this four times. Well, what's this? Because you talked about two things in the previous sentence. So, but anyway, you know, off of that, I'll let him kind of elaborate about what's the next step for that.
No, I mean, seriously, I'm not a grammatical or English expert, and I don't intend to be at any point in time. So that's part of the process of deciding if you're going to self-publish or you're going to work with a publishing company, who has that skill set to help you bring that to life so the reader understands and comprehends what you're writing. I've spent almost two decades putting this manuscript together. I sent it to Mark, and when it came back, I started responding to his queries. Then I was busy, and then I think he thought I just like left and got mad at him because I stopped. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, that's what makes you better. And sometimes it won't make me better. I just don't have that skill set, but you partner with somebody who does. So if you're going to self-publish and you want to put out a quality product, you have trusted people who you know have that skill set. Otherwise, you interview the publishing companies and ask them, who's doing this on your end? What's their background? And what am I going to expect when it comes back to me? And that's really important because I can tell you, in working with multiple publishing companies in these academic textbooks, they all approach this differently, with some more shallow on their editorial reviews and some are very, very in-depth, to the point where it'll frustrate you because you almost feel like, wow, how did you contract with me if I made this many mistakes in my writing? But I'm not a writing expert. I try to bring an idea and content to the table, and these people are here to get paid to make me look good so it comes out in a way for the reader to understand. And you know, I'm joking about this, but the guy sitting next to you has a gift for that. He really, really does. And yeah, it's frustrating. I mean, nobody wants to be shot down with your submissions, especially if you think you've done this a number of times and you're at the top of your game. It really doesn't matter. You always get better and benefit from others in collaborating with someone who's got a skill set that complements yours.
Yeah, and I'll back that up because it goes back to what he said. I call it the mission. He says the why. What is your goal of writing your book? If your goal is to teach others about the right, then do that. You're the expert in that. Let somebody else go through and find little errors. I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, writing. It's not some magic thing that you have to do everything. You can publish it. I only publish everything myself because, and to give you an example, when I do my brain dump, that's hard for me to read. I was like, I'll go back into it. Like, what the heck was I talking about? Have to go back and reread it. And then, so what I'll do is I'll do a brain dump, and then I'll go through and I'll, you know, and these are, most of mine are about 180 pages at a 6x9 or 5x8. So there's a lot of text, but my second time through, I start organizing. Then I go through a third time and read the whole book. And then what I do on the fourth, fifth, and sixth time, I highlight text and I use the Microsoft Word, text to voice. I'll have it read out loud to me and I'll go through it one whole time, and then I'll usually find a lot of errors. Second time I'll find probably 10 errors, and the third time I better not find any errors. That's my process. But because if you read your own text, you cannot see your own errors. You will skim right over them. And so again, it goes back to the, what are you trying to do? Your job is to get the book written. What do you want in your book? That, because your name is on it. My name is on this book. This is what I want in my book. A publisher might say, well, for us to publish it, you have to include these things. I mean, I wrote this. This is a book I just put out over spring break. It's a vestibular migraine symptom logbook. What do you see in there?
It's like a bunch of the same.
A lot of the same thing. I just said, okay, well, there's no book out there that a vestibular migraine patient can actually write down their symptoms about and give to their doctor. I mean, you talked earlier, how do these ideas? Oh, I was looking through Amazon for competition on another book I want to write, saw that they have a migraine logbook. And so I'm like, well, what about vestibular migraine? Completely whole another area. So I went to the guidelines for what's required to get a diagnosis of vestibular migraine. Took those guidelines. So I said, okay, well, let's introduce what is the book about? And then how do you use this chart? So I have three or four pages of how to use it. And then I have a little log about, okay, I saw these doctors, because that's a lot of frustration. I keep going to these different doctors and they keep telling me, so let's log those in. Log the medications you're in, and then day one. So this is a book that has, I don't know, 15 pages of text and 130 pages of daily logs. So that's what I wanted in the book. And so I did that on Photoshop. And so we can talk about cost, which is really not that much, but it's just, it comes down to your job is to write the book. Dr. Conan is the content expert about management and athletic training. He's not a copy editor. He could be if he wants to, but the publisher will take care of that, or he can hire somebody. Let them do the little work. You get the expertise into the book, and then write what you want in there. And then now again, publisher may come back and say, I also want this, or it's too wordy, or it's too long. It's, you know, it costs us too much to print it for what we're going to sell it at, something like that. But that's your biggest step, is to just write what you want in there. And the nice thing about self-publishing is whatever you want in there is in there. My vestibular books are all very similar. They have the introduction, and then we go into the anatomy, then we go into the latest research on the condition, and then we go into what are the symptoms, what is the diagnosis, and then I always tell my own story. If I had the condition, that's the biggest feedback I get, is it was so nice to read what happened to you. And so I always include that in the, I think, four books I wrote on the vestibular conditions, and that really connect. Then I talk about quality of life. And then I actually thought with one of my books on tinnitus, I put a chapter in there of what tinnitus patients wish that others knew about the condition. What's the frustrations they feel? And that's been my second biggest feedback point, is I'm so glad you wrote that, because I gave this to my wife and now she understands it's not just me telling her this. She can actually read what's going on. So I doubt a publisher would want that in there. They'd probably say, no, that's it's not what. And so I would have to take that out if I went through the publisher, who's taking the risk on. But with me doing it self-publishing, whatever I wanted was in there. So it goes back to answer your question, just what do you want in the book? But you have to do that. And then send it to somebody, pay them to copy edit it, format it into a book format, and then it's ready to be published. So.
Right, so you have mentioned the cost. And so what do you think would be the bare minimum dollar? So if I was going to do all the work myself, bare minimum dollars.
I can tell you exactly. Dr. Conan, did you have something you wanted to add? Yeah. So if you do self-publishing, there's a few things you're going to need. One is Microsoft Word or some other word processor. You know, I joke with people. It's like, well, how do you have time? Do you do it at work? I'm like, no, I will not open the file at work, because I don't want there to be any conflict of, you know, you did this while you were at work. So I won't even open the file. So I paid when I bought a computer, I bought an office. And when we go back to owning a publishing company, that really means I own a computer in a room. And that computer has programs on it. So Microsoft Word is what I use to write the book. Photoshop is what I use to design the cover. So let's say, I think my annual Office 360 is $70 a year. Photoshop is for educators and students is $19 a month. I have to make my covers and to use my images, I have a monthly subscription to Shutterstock, which is $20 for 10 downloads a month, I believe. So you need images. You can't just go off the internet and pull an image. It's a copyright issue violation. So I buy the image from Shutterstock, and then once you buy it once, you can use it whenever you want. You have to buy ISBN numbers, and that's a kind of a monopoly. I don't know, Dr. Conan, if you're familiar with that process, but if the publisher will have their own ISBN numbers, and that identifies that book as the International Standard Book Number. If you're going to self-publish, you have a couple options. You can go with and have Amazon give you an ISBN number, but that becomes their book because it's their ISBN number. I chose to buy my own. This is where the monopoly is. If you buy one ISBN, it's like $99. If you buy 10, it's $295. If you buy 1,000, I think it's like $500. So they're trying to incentivize, and only one company, Bowker.com, sells them. So you have to get them through them to get an ISBN number. Ebooks, ironically, don't need an ISBN number. So you only need ISBN if you're doing a hard copy. And I think, so that's the bare minimum. If you do all your own editing, your own cover design, and you type the book yourself, you're looking at, you could do it for about, if it took you 2 months, you'd say you had 2 months of Shutterstock, you could do it for around $200. But that's a kind of a misnomer, because you've already paid for Word. You're not buying the program. You have Word already. You need to buy Photoshop if you want to do a cover, or Adobe Illustrator or something like that, because it's got to be a high quality image that you convert to a PDF. So realistically, $200, you could do it. Now, you also, if you don't edit it yourself, which is what I do, I do my own editing. If you want to pay somebody, you're looking at editing, you're looking at like $1.50 a page for them to go through and say, move this around, change this. Copy editing, you're looking at about $200 for about a dollar a page for about $200 for a 200 page book. And then a cover design is where they get you at, because that takes usually a graphic design artist who's usually trained through a university. You can look at anywhere from $400 to $600 for a professional cover, but that's what they really emphasize, is you want a professional cover. I will do about a B grade level of a A through F. I do about a B. Graphic artists will do an A plus, but you're going to pay for it. So there's those options, multiple ways of doing it. But again, if you go, that's if you self publish. If you do a vanity publisher, you pay them $2,000, they'll do everything. It could be $5,000, but then you have the inventory in your house. You have to sell. And then, as Dr. Conan can harp on, the publisher does all that. That's where their risk is. They took on the cover design, they took on the marketing, all that stuff. So, and that's another thing, is the marketing. So you've got to have ideas of how you're going to sell your book, because your wife will buy a copy, your best friend will buy a copy, your couple colleagues will buy a copy. What about the rest of the people that really need the information? How are you going to get that out? You can hire consultants, you can hire publicists. Social media is a big thing, so you might have to have a social media accounts and things like that. So, Dr. Conan, any additional comments?
No, I'm not as in tune as you are in the self-publishing area. What I would say in general, though, Jeremy, is that if you're open-minded and you understand how to collaborate and find others who not necessarily have the same interests as you, which is important too, but have a skill set that complements yours, whether it's academic textbook or self-publishing, you have an avenue to travel down that road and be very, very successful. And if you look at that as a perspective, for example, we've only known each other really less than 2 years. And the last podcast, Adam and I just met less than a year ago. So when you reach out and you try to find individuals who want to collaborate and work together, and you find that chemistry is there, you can really set your goals to whatever you want to do as it relates to publishing.
Okay. There's quite a lot. There's still more that we could cover. And is there anything, any final things that you think are really important for somebody that is going to publish a book?
I will just say, just do it. There are ways to get it done. Do not look at it as some unicorn out there that, I'll know. I think we didn't catch this at the beginning. I had somebody come by my office yesterday, and I just said, look at writing a book. And she said, oh, there's no way I could ever do that. And by the time I was done explaining to her the process and about self-publishing, she actually was excited. She said, I need to go home and start writing. I've got a cookbook I haven't finished. I've got a fiction book I tried to write. It's got 30,000 words. I sent a children's book off during Christmas break. Still haven't heard. I heard from one. I got one rejection. I sent it to like 14 publishers and haven't heard back from them. I just do it. Just spend 30 minutes, spend an hour writing out what you want on any topic out there. You could do how to set up a podcast. You could make an ebook out of that. It doesn't have to be this 200-page academic book. It doesn't have to be a 400-page novel. It can be whatever you want it to be. If you have an expertise or you have a value that you think others would benefit from, write a book. Have somebody write the book for you. But just don't look at it as it's this magical thing that, I call it the library effect. Go stand in a bookstore, go stand in a library, slowly spin around and look at all the books on all those shelves. And you're telling me, athletic trainer with a master's degree, bachelor's degree, or doctorate degree, you telling me that everybody that's published in that bookstore or that library is smarter than you? And I will challenge you 100%. So why is it they did it, but you can't feel you can't do it? Absolutely, you can do it. There's ways to get it done. And once you do it, and Dr. Conan and I have joked about this, once you do it, once the book's published, you literally, I hate to look, it's not a financial thing, but you wake up and you go online and see how much money you made. You know, it's a really cool thing. Plus, people will like look at you like, oh, you wrote a book. And, you know, secretly you can say, well, it wasn't that big a deal. It wasn't, you know, it took me 6 months. It wasn't that big. But yeah, I did. I'm an author. I'm a published author. So I can't stress enough. Just do it and get started in 10 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day. That time's going to add up eventually. And you're going to have a book sitting there. Then you're going to be sitting there saying, okay, I can't take this any further. I need somebody to hone this up a little bit and just get a book out of it. You know, it doesn't matter. Again, how to put a fence in, how to get critters out of your attic. I don't know, but it's not a magical process. I know I'm not supposed to say that as an author, and you want people to think that it's this incredible accomplishment. And there, it's hard. I mean, it's a lot of work, but I can do it. Anybody can do it. I mean, anybody that, you know, I'll go with, you know, if you can write a term paper, if you have computer skills and the ability to do an essay, you can write a book. And then it just, the less writing skill you have, the more it would cost to get it into a good book format. But anybody can do it. That's my final word.
Yeah, I want to close on 2 points. And one is, at the risk of sounding desperate for business, if you're watching this podcast and you have an idea, reach out to one of us. We're not going to steal your idea.
Yeah.
I'm not going to steal.
No, I agree. That's a great point. We want to help. I want to help. I'm an educator. I love teaching. I love that side of it. And Dr. Cohn is the same way.
Or reach out to others who have written books and are successful, but learn from others. Don't try to reinvent the wheel and make too many mistakes. And the second piece of it is, we downplayed the royalties, but royalties are royalties. And it's really nice when they do come in. And so, you know, put your mind to work and say, when these come in, how will I take care of myself? Will I take a vacation with these royalties? Will I pay off the house mortgage sooner? Will I do these for my kids or my spouse, whatever it is? But those are great feelings when those checks do come in. Again, they don't equate to the amount of time you put in typically, but it's really nice to have those versus not have those. And it's allowed me to do a lot of things in life that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
And I'm going to add on that royalty. It's a great point. You're going to make money probably, but think of it this way. You might have 5 people on your city block that sing great. Why are they not Taylor Swift? So if you go and Google how to write a book, or what can I write a book, you're going to read about $1 million signing bonuses, or not signing bonuses, royalty advances. That's not realistic. That's for Stephen King or somebody. And you get some authors that, and I said like celebrities, they have a thought and a publisher will literally throw them $1 million because they know they're going to sell that much money. So don't, I listen to a lot of podcasts and YouTube videos about publishing. And they said it usually takes about 7 books before you really start getting known as an author. So if you put 1 book out, don't sit there and click on your Amazon profile and watch and expect the royalty amounts to, or the sales to go in. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's very addicting, but it's, you're there to make money for it. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to stop writing now. I finished 1 book over spring break and I did this one. And now I'm like, I kind of want to do another one, but I don't have the passion because it hasn't been something that's affected me personally. So I'm kind of forcing myself and it just isn't there. So I'm going to take a break. I've got an idea. I want to check in with my publisher about the book idea that they said is almost ready to go. They wanted to check with marketing. And so I'm going to call them back and maybe I'll go in that direction instead. So but you know, I'm going to plug what I did on the vestibular. If anybody wants a copy of one of my books that's listening, that's an athletic trainer, I will just send me an email and I will send them the interior of the book and they will see, this is what I wrote. And if I can write that, they can write too. The only requirement is they have to leave a review when they're done. That's my only requirement. So, yeah.
So actually my call to action, or my thought there to kind of close this out is what is your book idea? And then I was going to say tweet it to me, but maybe not. I promise I won't steal your book idea, but you can just, you know, send it to me on social media or email, you know, me and enclose Dr. Knobloch and Conan in there and just tell us what your book idea is. And then, you know, they can help point you in the right direction. Of course, I can send you a copy of the show notes because I try to type down as much as I can, but send us your idea, your book idea, just send it to us. Because even just typing out, this is my book idea, is one step towards the process. Because now you've put it in writing and you've kind of involved other people, and it's not just something that's bouncing around in your head. So send us your book idea. You can email Dr. Jeff Conan at gmail.com. So it's DrJeffKonin at gmail.com, or MaKnobla. Actually, you prefer to use the...
No, that's the Gmail. I don't want any book stuff going to my work address. So M-A, then my last name, Knobloch, K-N-O-B-L-A-U-C-H at gmail.com. Questions, comments, or if you want... And again, if you want to... If you go on Amazon, you can type my name in. I think you have to put PhD because my last name is German for garlic. So you'll get actual really strange results. But type in Mark Knobloch, PhD, and I should have, I think, 11 books on there. The only one I can't give out is my the academic writing book that Dr. Conan helped me on, which was clearly the most professional one, but that's through a publisher, so I don't have the copyright on that. They do. I can't just give it out. But I can send you, if you request any of my books, I will send you a PDF of the full formatted interior. You can read it. I just ask that you leave a review.
Cool. So email us your book ideas. We want to see them, help you. Maybe at some point come back on here and you can talk about how Dr. Knobloch and Conan helped you through this podcast, get started and write your book. So any other thing, any other way you want people to get a hold of you, Dr. Conan?
No, the email is perfect. And I just want to say thank you, Jeremy, for having this forum and allowing us to share our ideas and what we're passionate about. And hopefully it helps other people, but you're doing a great thing. And I know many of us enjoy tuning in to watch all the different topics that you cover.
And I think passionate about it is exact. I mean, it is fun to write. And he's written, is it 27 now, Dr. Conan, or 24? Okay, that's even worse. He just lost count. But it is fun. I tell you, nothing is more encouraging than because I wrote several on vestibular disorders. When a patient emails me to tell me how much their book meant and how much they connected with it, that is the best feeling in the world. And so it encourages me to want to do more. Because I've had, it's like Dr. Conan said, I thought I was a great writer, and then somebody else reads it and treads it. And I'm like, oh, I'm not a good writer. And then somebody tells me, a consumer that read the book said, your writing is amazing. And I mean, it's just, I'm not trying to sound facetious, but it's just so encouraging. And so when he says we're passionate about it, I wish somebody would say, hey, Dr. Knobloch, here's an idea I had. What do you think? I want to jump on I'll tell you exactly what I think. Here's what you could do. I mean, it's like I tell the students with case studies, you tell me the situation, I will spin it into a way we can make it interesting and make it into something people can learn from. So if you have a book idea, just tell one of us. Dr. Conan's, I mean, he's so knowledgeable. He could tell you, here's the bad parts about doing it. You're not going to make much money off of it because there's 22 other books on the topic, but here's how we can get you a book written, and here's what your little niche will be that's different from the other 22. So, yeah, I love, it's very fun to engage in this. And it's the product, once the book's out, it's out for perpetuity. You will forever have that book. It's not like you have to go and renew it or something. It stays out. It's published forever. So once you get one done,
I want to add one more thing about the why too, because if you understand your topic, you can understand how far it can take you. For example, if I have a textbook that's on legal topics and athletic training, it's capped within the U.S. It has no meaning to countries outside the U.S. because of legalities that we're writing about. But if I write a book on kinesiology is kinesiology internationally. And that book has the potential to be translated in different languages. And I got to tell you, it's really cool when you travel to another country at a conference and you see your book there at an exhibit hall. The only thing you recognize and can read is your name on the cover. And everything else is in a different language. That's just one of those, that's not really why you get into this, but it's one of the unexpected perks on the back end. That's just really neat to see and have those kind of opportunities.
Awesome. That would be really fun, just seeing your name on a completely different cover or font or whatever it is in different language.
And you self-publish, you get to pick the font. So cool. You just exactly what you want. So
All right, so Dragonfly Max is going to be hosting the Podcast Lounge, where you can catch me at NATEA as long as they keep doing it. I'll keep going. Frio Hydration, my preferred hydration equipment. So I'm expecting a new unit there as part of the sponsorship for this for the podcast here. But definitely tell them the Sports Medicine Broadcast sent you there. Myotech, Hoist Hydration, all great products that are, again, joining me here on the podcast. If you have an idea, somebody who might be wanting to sponsor the podcast, let me know. But this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/publish-a-book. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/publish-a-book with Dr. Jeff Conan and Dr. Mark Knobloch. Thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom with us and helping us move forward, and for some people really conquering that dream of publishing a book. And that is a wrap.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.